from the Three Story Method Podcast Network.
This is the Serial Fiction Show.
I'm Christine Daigle.
And I'm JP Reinbush.
Welcome to the Reader's Serial Fiction Show. Today, we've got a fantasy romance by Pepper Pace called 1954. Bailey is a young aspiring actress that has never had a real acting job besides a role in a high school play. But when she sees an ad for a production that takes place in 1954, she decides to take a chance. The only thing she knows is that it's fully immersive and would require her to live in the fictional town for one full year. The rules are simple. Stay in character, and she gets a nice payout of more than $100,000. But would a Black woman willingly live in the 50s?
Pepper Pace creates a unique brand of interracial, multicultural, erotic romance. While her stories span the gamut from humorous to heartfelt, the common theme is crossing racial boundaries. Pepper Pace lives in Cincinnati, Ohio, where many of her stories take place. She writes in the genres of science fiction, youth, horror, urban lit, and poetry. In addition to writing, she's also an artist, a YouTuber, an introverted recluse, a self-proclaimed empath, and a foodie. And now, a sample of 1954, Episode 1.
Bailey opened the email and reread the short message for the third time. Miss Westbrook, you have been selected to move to the next phase of audition. Please dress in the appropriate manner based on your character outline. Authenticity is a key to moving on to phase 3 of this project. The email then provided the time and location for the audition. However, there was no script for her to rehearse. She navigated to the Facebook group called Rising Stars. It gave encouragement to up-and-coming actors and actresses, and sometimes even provided leads to auditions, mostly for commercials and local plays. But sometimes there was a heads up for a part as an extra on a performance set to play at the Aronoff Theater. As a 22-year-old would-be actress that had never been involved in any acting gig beyond her high school productions, Bailey needed as many tips and as much free guidance as she could get. After locating the Facebook post that was entitled simply 1954, she reread it, confirming that it was still just as mysterious and vague as it had been when she first saw it. Hi, guys and gals. If you are an up-and-coming actor, actress, located in the greater Cincinnati area, and able to devote 1 year to a fully immersive project, then you may be what we are looking for. You must be willing to relocate, location to be announced, and all fees and travel expenses are fully covered. This is an interactive play that will require improvisation skills and the ability to stay in character at all times. Phase 1 of the audition will require each applicant to provide an outline of their character in a 1954 Midwestern setting. Authenticity is the key, so remember that there are no cell phones in 1954. Use of era verbiage and slang is a plus. Other than an email address to submit the character outline, there was nothing else listed. Bailey had allowed her mind to roam with the idea of living in 1954. Of course, as a Black woman in the 50s, she would most likely have been relegated to a job as some white family's maid. Her commute to work would have required her to sit at the back of the bus. If she had to do the shopping, she would have been required to wait until after all the white customers had been served first. She would not have been able to make eye contact with any white person that she crossed paths with. And if she passed a white person while walking down the street, even a white child, she would have been required to step off the sidewalk and into the grass, dirt, or road to give them the right of way. The 50s, for some, might have been a golden age in American history, but for others, it would have been a nightmare. Bailey had toyed with the idea of writing an outline of a young woman with that history. But there was another side to the idea of that era and time, and that included the pinup girls, the 50s housewife, the wholesome 50s family unit, and even the not-so-wholesome bad boys that wore leather jackets, high-water pants, and carried switchblades. So, she had spent the weekend writing a fantasy tale about a day in the life of a young wife in 1954. She had forgotten all about it until today, when she'd gotten the email about moving on to phase two. It had instructed her to appear for an audition next Saturday. She was intrigued, despite her confusion. But if she only had until Saturday, she needed to get on the ball and find herself an outfit. Bailey fired up her laptop to research online stores that specialized in 50s era attire. There were several cute options, but none could deliver a dress in less than 7 days. Would thrift stores have 50-style dresses? She thought it was doubtful, so instead, she decided to look up theatrical costume shops and found one in downtown Cincinnati that said they had what she was looking for. She was at the store within an hour. They had two options that she could make work with a few alterations, which they said could be done in 24 hours. While the red suit with the matching waist-length jacket and pencil skirt initially caught her eyes, the plaid dress with the billowy skirt best represented her role as a simple housewife. The store owner reminded her that if she was going for authenticity, not only would she need the dress, but also a hat, gloves, and a handbag that matched her shoes. And that is how a dress that would have cost her $40 ended up costing her nearly three times that. She wasn't sure why she had splurged. She wasn't rolling in dough. But when she saw everything laid out together, she knew that wearing those items would not just allow her to act, but to become the part. While the shop worked on the alterations, Bailey assessed her natural hair. No way was she going to take down her braids, not even for a roll. If people understood the pain and time it took to get micro braids, it would be self-explanatory. Instead, she went out searching the wig stores until she found a perfect Betty Boop style wig. She cringed when she took stock of the money she'd spent today. Why couldn't this have been a simple scripted rehearsal? More importantly, why was she so excited about playing the role of a 1950s housewife? It sounded like some Renaissance festival shit, but she was still intrigued. When she got the dress back after alterations, Bailey was anxious to put it on. She had gone out to the Walmart and purchased a pair of thigh-high nylons. She'd hit a thrift store and found some costume jewelry, including a jewel-encrusted hair barrette that looked like it would have been worn as some woman's crown and glory, perhaps a humble housewife that didn't have much money to splurge but wore her grandmother's jewelry with pride. She put on the dress and all the props, and once the wig was in place, her breath caught in her throat. She stared at herself in the floor-length mirror that was hooked to her bathroom door. She barely recognized herself. She did a slow spin. From the simple heels to the hat that she'd pinned carefully on her head, Bailey looked like pictures she'd seen of black women in the 50s, crowding into old-fashioned passenger cars so they wouldn't have to break the bus boycotts. She looked like the beautiful aunties and grandmothers that dressed in their Sunday best. She smiled proudly at herself. On Saturday, she drove to the audition, praying that it was above board, even if it did turn out to be some experimental theater thing. She pulled up to a Chinese restaurant, double-check the address, and then with a shrug, she went inside. There were several other people sitting in the restaurant's waiting area, and each turned to look at her as soon as she entered. She was relieved when she saw that they were all dressed in 50s attire. The host, an older Asian man, greeted her. "Please, have a seat. Auditions have begun," he said, while gesturing to the benches that lined the wall. "Thank you," she said politely, and took a seat next to a man dressed in a business suit and hat. He looked nervous but authentic. He even smoked a cigarette. She didn't really want to be inhaling his cigarette smoke, but took the seat anyway because he looked like the safest option. Also present was a woman that looked to be in her 30s. She was wearing a 50s-style bathing suit with pinup girl written all over her. Despite being underdressed, she looked comfortable in the attire. There were two other men, one dressed like a mechanic. He even wore grease-stained coveralls with the name Bobby stitched onto his breast pocket. His blonde hair was heavily oiled and flopped in his eyes as he waited. He reminded her of an actor named James Dean. He was talking to the other man who wore an old suit that looked too big with dusty old shoes. The second man didn't look like he was from the 50s. He just looked a little bit like a bum. She was the only black person present. The man sitting next to her gave her a quick look. "I hope this gig is on the up and up," he said. "I've been out of work for a few weeks now." He offered his hand. "I'm Marty." She accepted his hand. "Hello, I'm Bailey." She looked around curiously. What a strange place to hold an audition. She could see that there were people eating in the restaurant. Strangely, they were all dressed in 50s attire as well. "I'm not here for an audition," Marty said while squashing out his cigarette in a nearby ashtray. "Wait, restaurants outlawed smoking in restaurants ages ago." "I'm hoping to get a sales position at the new Chevy dealership. I used to be a sales manager at Luke's GM. He spoke in a suddenly mocking tone. "We had a snazzy jingle, Lucky Luke's," Marty sighed. "Wasn't so lucky for me. I got canned because everybody wants a Chevy these days." Bailey glanced at the ashtray and then out to the diners in the restaurant. And then she recalled what the host had said. Auditions had begun. She eyed the man named Marty and then smiled. "We can't afford a car right now. My husband just got back from Korea, but maybe soon." "Well, I'd like to shake your husband's hand. Say, if I get this job at the dealership, you have your husband come down. I'll set him up with a good deal." "Thank you. I'll be sure to let him know." Bailey's heart was beating a mile a minute. Fully immersive was what this play was described as.
So, JP, let's talk about Pro Writing Aid. And as they say on their website, it is the secret to polished and professional writing. As writers, we make the same mistakes. When you use Pro Writing Aid, you can get clear, easy steps to improve your writing so you can share your ideas with confidence. Whether you're doing creative writing, business writing, academic writing, just composing an email and you want to sound smart, Pro Writing Aid will help you.
And 100%.
There's something new. What is it, JP?
So Atticus, which is a wonderful program that includes book formatting, and it is developing aspects for writers so that it can basically be a one-stop shop for writers, has an integration with Pro Writing Aid now. So we've mentioned before that Pro Writing Aid has a lot of integrations with, you know, Google Docs and Microsoft Word, and now Atticus, which just makes, one, it makes that tool Atticus really shiny and nice for authors that are looking for a one-stop place. But it's just the fact that ProWriting Aid can integrate with so many programs so that you're able to use this sort of last line defense before handing it off to someone. It just makes it so much easier. I love using ProWriting Aid because then I don't have people that are editing it looking for simple mistakes that I can find using ProWriting Aid that I can learn from. And instead, they're looking at the deeper content and they're able to notate that. So I just find ProWriting Aid so nice. So I love it when I hear a new integration has happened.
Absolutely. Check out ProWriting Aid. It will help you be a better writer. ProWritingAid.com. Use our discount code Serial20. All right. So Bailey throws herself into the acting role of the century. I'm curious, what inspired you to write this serial?
Oh man, that's a good long story, because it started with my fascination with burlesque, which then led into 50s housewives. And then I wanted to explore what would it be like to be a Black African-American 50s housewife. And then I thought, well, if you really were a 50s housewife, it would be more than just the housewife, the pinup girl. You'd have to face civil rights. And that just opened the door to like, I just got to explore this concept.
I'm a little curious though, because you mentioned burlesque. What interests you about burlesque? And is there any like resources or movies that someone might want to grab onto if they want to grab into that interest?
Well, when I first started doing research on burlesque, I was looking for Black burlesque because, I mean, the whole concept of the sexiness, it's just so, I think it's so romantic and sexy. And so as I was exploring it, and as a means to like maybe go visit a burlesque show with my significant other, I thought, well, where are the Black burlesque players? And there were some in Vegas, but they're gone, you know, so it was hard to find it. So, you know, if anybody knows of African-American, Black, people of color, burlesque players, let me know. Because I would love to, you know, see some and support that.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
That's awesome. So you've got this great character, Bailey. I'm also curious which character you're excited for readers to read about and why.
I think I really am gravitating toward Bailey. Now, she is a young, idealistic girl. It could be any girl. I mean, it could be somebody you're related to. And I think she just gets in over her head. Her ideas of what the world should be is going to come crashing down on her when she gets a taste of what the world used to be, which is why I like that kind of tagline that I had, where the past meets the present. You know, so she, in this story, Bailey is going back in time, in essence, to play the role of a 1950s housewife in a very immersive, like a reality show. And she wants to incorporate realism into it. And she gets a bit of surprise when they do incorporate that, you know, things like walking down the sidewalk and getting knocked over because you didn't, you know, step out of the way of a person who is white, or looking at the signs that say whites only. So I mean, it is more than just that too. I mean, I think Bailey learning to become an adult. I mean, she's a young woman who has never really taken care of herself. She's been, you know, living with her aunt. She did move out on her own for a while, but she never really took care of herself. Now she has to be a wife, manage a household, learn to cook. So there is a lot of comedic aspects in the story with her trying to be a good housewife.
So you've already mentioned so much that I'm super excited to read about, but I'm curious, is there maybe one thing about the stories that you want listeners to know or to be excited about?
Yeah, I know that I tend to try to shine a mirror or reflect the real world And as we take a look at what the past looked like, I want people to understand that we have not really moved too far from the past. And I think at least the characters, because when you go into that set of 1954, you know, initially it's like, there's no racism in this story. It's just about, you know, you could be a Black woman that's married to a white person and there's no repercussions. Well, yeah, there was in 1950. So she, if you're bringing in that realism, you know, you have to address that. And that is, I love how the characters who are mainly white, when they have to face, you know, what Bailey is going through, they are just like, they're struck by it. They're just, this, you know, blows my mind that this is something that not only did people really have to go through in the past, but people are still really going through this. So that's what I really want people to enjoy it, but to understand that there is growth for these characters and hopefully for the reader.
Wow. Yeah, that's so powerful. I love that, you know, we can use fantasy to kind of show the truth about things in the real world. And the Rabid Reader recently called you the queen of romance realness. So in your opinion, what makes your romance stories stick out from other stories?
Well, when I first started writing, I didn't write because I just wanted to complete a story. I really wrote because I wanted to explore something that interested me, that turned into a story. So it might have begun with a homeless man that I walked past every day on my way to work and just wondering like, well, what is this man's life really like? And then, of course, being a romance writer, just exploring the concept of, you know, someone like me who might say, wow, I saw something deeper in you than whatever caused you to become a homeless person. So as I'm exploring and taking these layers away, and I'm not just writing a fantasy story, I'm just really saying, well, if this guy is like this, then she is probably like this. What if she was like this? How would they really get along? And that's how I'm not going to say all of them, but the majority of my stories are realistic in that way. Like I have a story called Beast that is kind of a play on Beauty and the Beast. It's not an exact Beauty and the Beast, but it's about a person who has a man who has a physical, you know, I mean, he has a bilateral cleft palate. So his deformity is so harsh. It's not like a handsome man that has a scar on his face or something like that. It is something where he really repels people away from him. But so many of my readers have read this person and fallen in love with him for what is on the inside. And that's the magic of storytelling. But that's the magic of people too, because everybody wants to find that realistic quality in a person, you know, and that's what I like to bring out in people.
I love that. I love the ability of doing that sort of character study and almost like holding up a mirror to the reader so the reader can kind of think through that process. And I mean, having the story set with this backdropping of the 1950s, or at least that sense of the 1950s, I'm curious what kind of research went into you know, having to look up a Black woman in the 1950s, and what was something that you maybe learned that you didn't necessarily know?
I love the research for that because, like I said, it began with looking for the looking at just burlesque, you know, players, and then so many of them were like Josephine Baker and the 20s and the 30s. But then when we got to the 50s and they were like pinup girls, then I was like intrigued with pinup girls for a long time. So it was mostly internet research. And the research, you have to look at things like, okay, so they're going to sit down and watch television. So I had to pull up the television lineup for October 1954 on Mondays, which was fun. And then if you go to YouTube, you can watch some of those shows. You know, what was in the headlines? And, you know, you can pull up a specific day, you know, in the headlines. And then it became really fascinating for me to just like sit there and just read what was happening in the 50s and what was happening, you know, where was the civil rights movement in 1954? Because that is the crux of this book, you know, 50s housewife meets, you know, civil rights movement. However, the main civil rights movement didn't really happen, didn't really kick off until 1955. But the main thing is that you had to lead up to it. So doing all of that research was really fascinating.
So I'm curious, with this serial or with other works, is there anything that you haven't explored yet that you plan to or would like to?
The thing with my writing is that I write every single thing that I've ever wanted to write. And that began because I began writing when I was a little kid. I was probably 12 years old when I wrote my first book, and nobody read it. But I wrote my first book when I was 12. And if I'm interested in sci-fi, then I'm writing something like The Galactic Exchange, which is on Kindle Vella right now. And I'm writing about alien romances. And if I want to write about street lit, then I'm writing stories about the 70s and hit women and gun violence, like, I call it gun violence, but guns. And, you know, so I wrote young adult. My daughter and I wrote a children's book. I can't imagine anything that I would like to write that I have not written. And my roots go back to erotica. So I've touched on almost every erotic story, genre, subgenre that you can imagine. And I think that's the main thing about being an author, is to test yourself, to push yourself, and to test your boundaries as a writer. And that's what I had to do to be successful, is to stop thinking about what other people thought, like, oh my gosh, she wrote this taboo book. You know, I had to really just kind of think, if it's something that interests me, then there's somebody else out there that it would interest, and I'm going to write it for me and that person. So.
So you mentioned there the Galactic Exchange, and I'm curious, do you want to tell us a little bit more about your other serials you have in Kindle Vella?
Yeah, currently I am writing, I have three stories that appear on Kindle Vella. The first story is the Galactic Exchange, and that's done really well. It is a sci-fi story about when aliens come to Earth, and it turns out that the aliens actually created man. And as they return to save Earth from, you know, destruction, humans decide, well, if you stay down here on Earth and protect us, we'll give you a consort to help you, you know, adjust. And it'll be like the most beautiful human, the human women that we can offer. And it turns out that these beautiful, most beautiful human women do not include any people of color, because the people who are in charge, who run the government in the future, are chauvinists and biased. So they want to give women first, and then they don't want to include any women of color. And what being a consort would mean is freedom. And it's something that not many people have in the future. You don't have money. Resources are limited. The earth has been really destroyed. They've taken away all systems of government. So with the Galactic Exchange, to be selected as a consort, for a seven-year period means after that period is over, then you have all the money that you could ever need and all the freedom that you could ever want. So everybody wants to be involved in it. Now, the Galatians, they don't really want to do this, but they're forced into it by a femdom, which is their queens. And their queens kind of, you know, let's get them out of the way before they come back to our planet, you know, and, you know, they run it. So it's really a lot going on with the Galatian exchange, but I knew it interested me. So when I began to write, and I thought about it for maybe 3 months without ever writing one word on it. And when I decided that I was going to actually share it, I never imagined that it would get so popular. I mean, because to me, it was just like I created this whole world. And I have a readers group. They love the Galatian exchange. They're predicting what's going to happen. They, you know, I can't wait for the next episode. Why did you stop here? So I was very excited with that. So that's the Galatian exchange. But I also was writing 1954 for Vela. Well, I didn't really write it for Vela. I should say that I began writing it as a novel, but then I decided to share it on Vela and it transformed. And when the way it transformed is that when you write for Vela, you can't write the same as if you are writing a novel, because a series has its own, it has different sets of climaxes and different, you know, it's just different points in which you don't follow, plot points that you don't follow if you're writing a novel. So I wasn't sure if when I decided, like, look, I got to stop with 1954 because as I'm turning it into a series, it will lose the novel, the book itself. So I stopped and I published it as a book, which is, you know, available to purchase. And I didn't know how people would, I mean, it's 761 written words, written pages, I should say. 760, that's the biggest book I've ever published. And I didn't know if people would say, well, geez, you really lost me in this. And they didn't. They're giving me really great feedback. I'm getting good reviews on it. The story kept its crown, even though it was completed, until like 2 days ago. So I actually had three stories that were on Kindle Vella that were crowned. Now, my other story, Sun, is a dystopian story about a young man who goes on this strange odyssey to understand why these people kidnapped him. This is in the future. Kidnapped him, tried to breed him, worship him. And when he's let go, he realizes that he does have these strange powers that is forcing him to go in a certain direction. But to me, Sun is just really fun. So with most of my books, even though they may seem serious or not serious, whatever, there's always humor in it. There's always going to, because life is just full of, I mean, you might cry in life, you might laugh in life, you know, you have to do all of these things in life. And that's what happens in Sun. So I do hope that people like it as much as I do, because I intend to keep Sun going as long as I can on Vella. So those are my three Kindle Vella stories.
Awesome. So as we're coming up on a year of Kindle Vella, I'm curious what you like most about writing serial fiction.
Oh, I love serial fiction. I began writing it was a platform called Literotica. And Literotica was just a free site where you can read any genre of erotica that you wanted, whether it be LGBTQ or whether it was interracial. And at the time I was reading a lot of interracial romances, and I was just reading it there. I wasn't even writing for Literotica. And I read so many great stories. Sometimes the free stories are better than the ones that you can purchase. I mean, I hate to put that out there, but you are getting people who, when you write serial stories, you're getting people who feel like, well, I wouldn't really make it as a real writer. And they're blowing up on these sites like Wattpad, things like that. So I definitely would encourage people to, you know, take advantage of looking at Vella and just browsing the thousands of stories, the many categories that interest you, and then find those stories under that category that you like or branch out into it. Like, I didn't know anything about reverse harem until Vella came out. I'm like, what in the heck is, why did everybody say reverse something? Why does it have to be reverse? Why isn't it just harem? Well, I understand now, and I absolutely love that genre. So, and I would never have probably ventured out into that if it wasn't for Kindle Vella. So the best thing for me is that it takes me back to my literotica roots. It takes me back to the instant feedback that you get. And when I say the feedback, you really do have to open yourself up if you're on something like Kindle Vella by either having a fans group or having your, allowing people to email you. I got emails from people saying, I didn't know you were writing other than Vella, and I've discovered some of your other books and I love them. So I get a lot of instant feedback. Another thing too, is that I think I get new readers, people who may not have said, they might say, well, you know, I'm not really into interracial or romance or blah, blah, blah. But, you know, this person is getting some likes, you know, so let me go check her out. And I'm getting new people all the time just based on that. So definitely, absolutely love serial writing.
Well, awesome. Well, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me. I enjoyed it.
Our thanks today to Pepper Pace for letting us share their episode. If you liked it, you can find the rest of the serial on Kindle Vella. The link is in the show notes.
And that's a wrap. So have you ever sat in a giant martini glass?
I've sat in a giant shoe, but not a giant martini glass.
I think we need to make that happen. I would like to sit in a giant martini glass. Some sparkly heels on.
It does sound wonderful.
I know it does, especially if it comes with some martini too.
I don't know if I'd want to sit in the martini though.
No, I just read
not in the martini, just in the glass.
The glass.
Yeah. I would like to sit in the glass with a martini.
With a martini, that's not. Yes.